Welcome to Good News Friday on the Wall Builders Show. This is the intersection of faith and culture. It's where we take on the hot topics of the day from a biblical, historical, and constitutional perspective. You can be a part of it at our website as well, wallbuilders.com. Good place to make a contribution today if you want to contribute to the saving of America. As we like to say, we're starting to make saving the Republic our hobby. It's time to give up golf or something. I don't know. Take something out of your schedule. Even if you enjoy doing it, get rid of it and replace it with saving the Republic. Becoming a Constitution coach, hosting a biblical citizenship class there in your home, at your church, or you know, somehow being involved and helping to inform and equip the people in your life with the foundational principles that make the country great. Come alongside us. We need you. The nation needs you. Now is the time. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach, here with David and Tim Barton. David's America's premier historian. Tim is our president here at Wall Builders and a national speaker and pastor. And Good News Friday is always a good time to join us. And jumping into good news, David Barton's going to start us off. David, how's our Friday going to start?
Well, we're going to start with a twofer, and it involves election security and voting. And two federal cases have come down just recently that are very favorable for people who were concerned over what happened in 2020, that so many state laws were violated, so many unelected state officials changed the voting laws to allow things that had never happened before. And so what we saw, particularly in battleground states and states like Michigan and states like Pennsylvania, even in Arizona, a lot of the Democrat parties picked up on what those states were doing. And they said in other states, well, let's do the same thing here. So in Texas, what you had in Texas, Democrat Party in Texas went after Texas laws, the ballot security laws we have here. And they say, we think that everybody should be able to vote absentee ballot without excuse for any reason, whatever. In Texas, it says, hey, if you have a valid excuse, you know, if there's a military thing or if you're in the hospital or if you're over 65, you can get a mail-in ballot. And they said, we want everybody to have universal mail-in ballots in Texas. And to allow Texas to say it can only be for a certain reason, well, that violates the 26th Amendment. And so they sued. It went to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court let Texas law stand. And so that's good news that states are able to limit that unlimited number of absentee ballots and mail-in kind of ballots, and states are able to impose restrictions on that. So that's a good piece of news on election security that we know for sure that the less requirements you have on voting, the more fraud occurs. Not that it can't occur at other times too, but when you have no holds barred absentee voting, mail-in voting, it's just not a good thing. Well, this goes also to a federal court in Georgia. And in Georgia, there was a lawsuit in Georgia brought by the same kind of plaintiffs. And they complained about the fact that in Georgia, they have several things that they do there that they didn't think were right. And part of it deals with citizen proof. You got to prove you're a citizen to vote in Georgia. And so the legislature said, here's the proof that we're going to accept for those that vote in Georgia. If you're non-citizen, you can't vote. And you have to prove that you're a citizen to be able to vote here. Well, a bunch of groups sued that as well, and they went through and said, no, that violates the Constitution. You're taking away from people the right to vote, even though they are illegal, whatever. And the judge in the 11th Circuit said, no, this doesn't even need to go to trial. We're just going to do summary judgment on here. This is so crazy that we're not going to allow this to occur. So these are laws that Georgia passed 6 years ago that had been in court for 6 years. And now here, that's a second case in the same general vein of, hey, we're going to uphold state ballot security laws. We're not going to lessen it, make it easier to cheat. We're going to make it harder to cheat. And so that's good news for Texas and Georgia. And by the way, Texas is really good because there's six other states that have the same kind of requirements Texas has with you have to have a good excuse for getting absentee ballot. It's not no excuse voting. You have to have a good reason. And so that's really, we're looking at eight states here where these rulings have affected eight states and upheld voter security laws in eight states, and that is good news.
Yeah, very good news, and of course, chipping away at it, right? We're not expecting one big decision to change it all overnight. This is going to take time, and we're getting some of those incremental victories just like this one. Tim, how about you, man? Where are we headed first?
We're going to Wisconsin, and this is something we actually talked about on Tuesday with John Graves. Dan, I think you alluded to it. Maybe John in the interview as well. I know we talked about it. I don't remember who brought this up, but that in Wisconsin, they have a ballot measure, which the title of the headline says, Wisconsin voters approve ban on Zuckerbucks type election funding. And this was something that in Wisconsin, It says the voters approved a constitutional amendment Tuesday put forward by Republicans in reaction to grants received in 2020 that were funds by donations from Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg. And the article goes through and points out that Mark Zuckerberg donated in the 2020 election hundreds of millions of dollars, and that so much of that money went to Democrat cities. And specifically, there was a lot of money that went to some of these Democrat states, and actually some in Wisconsin, some major cities where it had what is believed to be a significant outcome on the election. It's where our friend Barry Loudermilk, congressman from Georgia, when he talks about the election, he says, you know, we can't say that necessarily it was stolen, but we certainly can say it was rigged. And this is part of how it was rigged. When you spend hundreds of millions of dollars to do these quote unquote, you know, voter initiatives, get out the vote, education drives, but you're doing it specifically to enable and incentivize Democrats in urban areas to vote in stronger numbers, right? This is not an across the board. We want every American to vote more cleanly and clearly.
And what made this really interesting, Tim, was they weren't giving the bucks to the normal outside activist groups. They were given to governments themselves and to government entities in blue areas of states, not in red areas of states. They gave it to the government entities themselves, which made it so unusual. And that was why it was so reprehensible, is you're paying the government to turn out a certain kind of voter rather than all voters.
Well, and this is something that a lot of people recognize. This is not even just suspicious activity. This is something that should not be legal for a billionaire to come in and spend a bunch of money to have certain people that are more inclined to vote a certain way vote and not encourage all voters, et cetera. So in Wisconsin, they were working to get this done. And this actually ended up being a ballot initiative. And the voters of the state. Now, what's interesting in this article, it says not a single Democrat lawmaker voted for the amendment. Which was then split into two questions to put on the ballot. So it was something they tried to get done through the normal legislative process. Democrats were not in favor of this. So apparently they want more outside money coming in. And, you know, this was something, if you go back to the early 1900s, right, the kind of the turn of the century progressive era, when you have people like the Rockefellers, right, you have some of these big money people who, in essence, were buying elections. And it led to some laws coming in America trying to prevent billionaires from buying senators, from buying congressmen, from buying elections. And yet this is exactly, in essence, what it appears that people like Mark Zuckerberg were doing. But Republicans who control the legislature, they brought the constitutional amendment to circumvent Democrat Governor Tony Evers, who they were convinced was going to veto the measure. And amendments are not subject to the governor's veto. And so Wisconsin voters came out and they approved this measure, making sure that what were known as Zuckerbucks could not be spent in Wisconsin to influence the outcome of future elections. So overall good news, as early this week we talked about what can be done to secure elections, voter integrity, certainly trying to limit a billionaire funneling money to certain government entities to try to get out certain demographics to vote. That could make a difference. It's one thing, right? If you're taking out ads on news media saying, hey, we want to encourage every American, get registered, every American, your voice matters, right? That's not quite what they were doing. And people in Wisconsin recognized that. And they said, yeah, we don't need those millions upon millions of dollars coming into our state trying to influence the outcome of the election going forward. So that is good news coming out of Wisconsin.
Yeah, and it's back to that incrementalism. I mean, these are seem like small victories, but they, you know, it's where we're, I guess what I'm trying to say is get a foothold, right? We get a foothold in some of these election battles and then can grab more ground as we go. So these are very, very important victories. All right, David, what's your next piece of good news, man?
This is another Supreme Court case, and this Supreme Court case dealing with California. And in California, there was a man who was moving into, he bought a piece of property. He's moving into his mobile home on that property. And all of a sudden, the city says, yeah, to move in, you got all these fees and all these studies you have to do. And so suddenly, he's looking at $23,000 of extra permitting fees to get studies done. And we all know Jim Garlow. He's a good friend. He was a pastor in California forever. He built a really great church down in the San Diego area. And I think it took them, you guys remember, was it like 5 years and 3 years of permitting? He spent like $5 million for environmental impact studies. I mean, it was just crazy what they required him to do. And the Supreme Court said, no, you can't do that. You can't have that kind of fees. You can't have that kind of fee structure. You can't do that kind of imposing that on landowners in the permitting process, require them to have all these extra studies. It's private property. It belongs to you. You have a right of private property. Now, there are some restrictions possible, sure, but this is just crazy stuff, raking in money, doing all sorts of agenda-driven stuff, keeping people from using their private property. So it's really good to see the Supreme Court strike back at that. We see that in so many climate agenda kind of states where they decide, where even just liberal states where, hey, we don't want a church in this area, so let's do all these extra fees and studies and we'll run this on another 3 or 4 or 5 extra years. And we think there may be a cross-eyed salamander somewhere in there and you need to do an environmental study on that. It's just crazy what they've done. So this is a good decision for private property owners and a good decision to help rein in some of the runaway regulatory powers, the permit stuff that's required when you try to use your own property. Really good news.
Cross-eyed salamander. I haven't seen one of those. I don't know if it would be able to see me if it was cross-eyed, but a cross-eyed, I like that, man. I'm gonna use that.
You and know, it's, I probably shouldn't have said that because some agency is going to start looking for cross-eyed.
Come up with one, yes.
And they're going to have studies and they're going to hold up they'll hold up all the construction until they find out if there is a cross-eyed salamander out there.
I am so glad you shared that story. I had seen that headline and I thought, man, that's a really good sign that the Supreme Court's leaning that way, going back to protecting, you know, private property rights and even bringing up the Fifth Amendment, that it's a taking. Of course, David, you and I talk about that when in Constitutional Live, you know, everybody always thinks about plead the Fifth. I don't have to self-incriminate, but it's that last part of the Fifth Amendment I like the most, which is they mess with your property and take your property. It's a taking. Even if they regulate you to the point that you can't use it, that's a taking as well, even if they don't actually take possession of the property. So really important fundamental principle there. That could have been a Foundations of Freedom Thursday story as well. We're going to take a quick break, folks. We've got more good news for you when we return. You're listening to The Wallbuilder Show.
Hey, guys, it's Tim Barton, and I want to tell you about our new book, The American Story, Building the Republic. We start with George Washington as president, and we've already become a nation. So really now it's how do we function as a nation? And if we look back in American history, the stability, the prosperity, success we enjoyed as Americans is because of the foundation that our early presidents laid, because of the examples they set. How do we live in America under the Constitution? What is the role of the federal government? And really, what part did each one of these early presidents play? We go through the first 7 presidents, and a lot of people probably know the names Washington, Adams, Jefferson, and Madison. Very few people know about Monroe or John Quincy Adams or Andrew Jackson. Now, we might know some of their names. We really don't know their stories. We want you to relearn, rediscover American history, and see how it applies to today. Go to wallbuilders.com and get your copy of The American Story, Building the Republic.
Welcome back to The Wallbuilder Show. It's Good News Friday. I almost said Foundations of Freedom Thursday because that last good news story was such a foundational principle. We're headed over to Tim this time. Tim, where are we going, bud?
Well, this one's in Georgia, and the headline says, Georgia joins states seeking parental permission before children join social medias. And it outlines that Georgia lawmakers approved a bill on Friday. Now, this was back in March when this happened. That would require children under 16 years of age to have their parents' explicit permissions to create social media accounts. It's Senate Bill 351. It would ban social media use on school devices and school internet services. Would also require pornography sites to verify whether users are 18 or over. Mandate schools to provide additional education on social media and internet use. And then it goes through other details. It was passed in the House 120-45, approved by the Senate 48-7, and it was awaiting final approval or veto by Governor Kemp. I really should have looked this up. I think it passed. Maybe, Dad, while you're doing your next article, I will look this up and confirm if this did pass or not. But this is really good news that you see states paying attention in the midst of the craziness of some of the transgender movement. And when you have kids that are, you know, 5, 6, 7, just an incredibly young age, that you have parents encouraging, let's already start doing some of this gender transition, right? Let's already start doing some of these hormonal treatments, this, you know, testosterone blocker or whatever else it might be. At such a young age, it's utterly ridiculous. Arguably maybe more evil than ridiculous. But to see states taking action in an attempt to try to protect students from things, recognizing some of the dangers of what's on social media, trying to help protect kids from what they might see, what the influences might be. To me, this is an incredibly positive step coming out of Georgia, and absolute kudos to the people of Georgia, that those state reps and state senators working to keep these kids safe under this. And I understand where, you know, there's some people, especially libertarians, you know, freedom for all, no limits, right? We don't want anything infringed upon. And guys, we've had some interesting conversations with students that just because you're young doesn't mean you don't have the same inalienable rights as those around you. But we also recognize that we have responsibilities as adults to protect our kids, to protect the rising generation. There is a balance here. And I think in Georgia, they've done a good job working to protect students and finding that balance.
Yeah, all right. We're bouncing all over the country, guys. Wisconsin, Georgia. Where'd you start us, David? What was that first story? It was Texas. You did a Texas election story, right? Wasn't that the first one?
We did Texas and California, both
California,
of those, and we also did a Georgia.
Oh, man. All right. So where are we going next? Let's just hit all 50 states. We got you know, like 10 minutes left today, guys. So can you hit all 50 states with good news?
Yes. No? The next one I've got is for all 50 states.
Oh, that's not fair. No. I wanted good news from each of the 50 states. All right.
Well,
go ahead.
I don't know about each, but all. I can do all of 50 states.
Okay. All right.
And the good news starts with bad news, unfortunately. And it is that with younger generation right now, we're seeing all sorts of studies that show that there is a lot of mental stress on younger generations. There's a lot of suicides. There's a lot of psychological pressure. And what they're getting at school, you know, so much pressure to transition, so much pressure on sexuality, stuff that hasn't been pressure in previous generations is now being crammed down their throats at a rapid rate. And it doesn't go with what their parents told them, or doesn't go with what they believe. And so we're seeing all this psychological pressure, and there's this isolationism going on. And as a result, there's a really good initiative. And of all people or all groups to start this, it started by a meal delivery service called Parsley Box. And Parsley Box said, you know, there's a lot of people in the older generation that would gladly be willing to just talk to young people and befriend and give guidance and just kind of help them think through some things. And we've seen this with other studies, 120 years of polling. And one of the things we found with George Barna was that this younger generation, they are open to guidance, and it doesn't matter what age you are. For most generations, they want you from their generation to give guidance. But this younger generation is, we just want the information. We want good stuff. And so what they have done is they have taken seniors, and as a Parsley Box has set up this hotline for young people that have any kind of trouble, any type of turmoil, any kind of indecision. You just need somebody to talk to. Here's a bunch of elderly people, and they're paying really high prices of these elderly folks to be able to do this. What they're doing is they give them endless tea, endless coffee, lots of biscuits, and they give them meals if they'll just be on the phones. So you have a lot of senior folks here who feel like, man, I've got a lot still to offer. I've learned a lot of things in life. I wish I could share it with somebody. We got young people say, I've never been down this road. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm all confused. And so it's really good. Now, here's where it's interesting to me, the polling. So when you look at the polling, when they polled the seniors and those that were 60 years and older, they found that 49% of seniors wished that they could advise younger generations on topics ranging from financial planning to self-confidence to health and wellness or how to cope with change or relationship advice. All these things that they've been through and navigated, sometimes successfully, sometimes not. They wish they could share what they've learned with other people, with younger generations. So that was the polling from the seniors. But polling was also done with the younger generations ages 18 through 30, somewhere in that vicinity. And 74% of that group said they wish they could ask older adults for guidance more frequently. They wish they, and this is a big deal because we talked before that generation, the 18 through 30 generation, 68% of them have grown up in homes where a mother and father was not present in the home. So they've really grown up in single-parent households, broken families, whatever. And there's just nobody to talk to. So you're looking at that high 74% wishes they could ask an older adult for guidance somehow. And grab this, 84% said that they wish they could call upon the wisdom of previous generations more often. So that's, you know, here you got polling for seniors to say, hey, we really want to be able to offer something because we feel like we got something to offer. And you got this overwhelming polling from young people saying, man, we wish we could talk to some seniors. And here was the kind of down, if there's a negative to this story, it was the self-confidence of the young people. 36% of the young people worried that their problem would seem silly to the older people. And they feel kind of embarrassed talking about it because it's just trivial. But those older folks understand, no, that's not trivial. If it's a big deal to you, it's a big deal. And we've all had to go through things that were big to us and we thought everybody else was going to laugh at us. But no, that's not the case. And 26% of the young people lack the confidence to even ask the question. So the biggest barrier to this being a great combination is just the self-confidence of the young people. And if there's young people listening, man, go ahead and ask the question because these guys that have had the experience, they don't think those questions are dumb. They don't think they're silly. They've had to go through the same things and they've got a lot of guidance. So I really think this is a great combination that has come up, and kudos to Parsley Box. And I don't even know I don't have delivered meals, but that's what these guys do. And I think it's a great combination trying to get the best of these two generations together and helping with that. And I see that as really, really good news. And hopefully you can share this with young people. Hopefully if you're a senior and want to share some stuff with young people, get a hold of Parsley Box, figure out how this works. The same with young people, get a hold of Parsley Box, see who you can call to talk to. It's going to be a good combination for everybody.
Yeah, that is really cool, David, because, I mean, we know anecdotally, right? We talk to young people that know they need advice, want advice. We know we talk to older people that know that they have a lot to offer, but they don't know how to connect to young people, or they don't necessarily have young people in their life. So what a cool way to meet the needs on both ends of the spectrum there. Really, really cool. All right, Tim, what about you, man? What's your last piece of good news today?
This last one's from Virginia. And it says, Governor Youngkin vetoes 30 anti-gun bills, keeping law-abiding citizens armed and Democrats angry. And it goes through the bills that were shot down by Youngkin. And just to give some context to this, in Virginia, that you do have a Republican governor, Republican lieutenant governor, but Republicans do not control the legislative chambers. Am I remembering that correctly?
You're remembering, and I'm going to add something before you go through that list of bills. In this last election, Virginia had the opportunity to get a Republican legislature, the House and Senate, and they did not. They missed it by a total of 2,000 votes in that entire state of, 12, 13, 14 million people in Virginia, whatever it is. And across all legislative races, an additional 2,000 votes would have given Youngkin the majority in the House and in the Senate, and he would have been able to get something done. So you've had a split legislature. It was split before. Republicans and Democrats had the House and Senate split. But now Democrats have both chambers over in the legislative side, and he's the governor by himself, which is why this is so extreme, the bills you're going to talk about. I mean, they all came out of the Democrat House and Senate as opposed to having a Republican House and Senate that was split that stopped a lot of this nonsense.
Yeah, and so just to run through a couple of these really quickly, I know we're almost out of time, but HB2 is a Democrat bill that would ban the sale or possession of new, quote, assault rifles, end quote. And to clarify, right, if you ask someone what's an assault rifle, they really don't know. But once they start breaking down the description, it's a semi-automatic rifle, and it's one that looks scary, right? I mean, that's the essence right of it. It's not one that, which also, even this notion of what's an assault rifle, you are using a descriptive word that is not necessarily part of what that is, right? I could have an assault can of green beans because I'm assaulting you with a can of green beans, right? You can have a rifle, but if you don't assault somebody with it, it's not an assault rifle. A lot of people are confused by, for example, the AR-15. They think, well, AR stands for assault rifle. No, it stands for Armalite rifle. It goes back to the originations of it. But anyway, there's a lot of extreme positions, HB 454, HB 585, HB 799, so many things. Again, there's 30 of them. I don't have time to read them all and go through them all. But it's just some of them are just seemingly so anti-gun and ridiculous. It's not going to take guns out of criminals' hands. It's just going to prevent, limit, and penalize would-be law-abiding citizens from being able to possess certain kinds of firearms. So really good he was able to veto and get rid of these.
And let me add to that also that those 30 bills coming through the Democrat House and Senate show you exactly what Democrats would like to do with guns. They want everything gone. As you go through those bills, anything related to guns, essentially, they're trying to take away. And so this is what's going on across the nation. That's a good reason for people to turn out and vote. If you don't want to lose your constitutional freedoms, this is what happens when you get a legislature in there that doesn't care about the Constitution. If it wasn't for Yonkin, this would be going a really bad direction in Virginia.
And I know we're out of time, but I just want to point out on Senate Bill 327, they describe a handgun as an assault firearm. So we've gone from assault rifle to pistols are now assault firearms. So everything is scary and nobody should own guns. Dad, to your point, it seems at least in Virginia, the Democrat position is very clear. They're very anti-gun.
All right, folks, if you need even more good news, then go to our website for the radio program. You can get the archives there at wallbuilders.show. And that's a great place to just listen and catch up. There's a lot of different programs on there from the previous months, weeks and months. And that includes more Good News Friday programs, as well as Foundations of Freedom Thursday, and then our regular guests throughout the week. So the quick and easy access to the radio archives is wallbuilders.show. That's wallbuilders.show. Or you can go to our main website, wallbuilders.com. That's where you can get all kinds of equipment for your family. And I mean equipment like educational materials. I'm talking about inspiration. I'm talking about things that you will be amazed when you learn them, and it'll inspire you to then teach others. So that might be where you want to sign up as a Constitution coach and start hosting these classes. Don't have to know anything yet. You just got to get people in a room and hit play. I bet everybody out there can do that. Find out more at wallbuilders.com. Thanks so much for listening today to The Wall Builder Show.